Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And today we're going to tell you the story of Jesse McFadden. We will say that this is a tragic case out of Oklahoma that is not suitable for younger listeners. We're going to describe the case with respect to the families of the victims, but there are sensitive topics that we will mention. Let's start at the beginning with Holly McFadden. Holly was a 35-year-old with three children. Riley Allen, who was 17 years old at this time. She was a great artist and had always wanted to paint. In fact, she wanted to be an artist or a doctor when she grew up. Holly's son, Michael Mayo, was 15 years old, and he loved video games. He was also active in track and football with the school. Holly's youngest was Tiffany Guess, who was just 13 years old. She was said to be a great student, track star, and all-around daddy's girl. It's been said that those close to her used to call her Tiffosaurus, which I thought was so cute. While they did have different fathers, Holly was married to Tiffany's dad, Joe, for 13 years. He had been in the kids' lives since Riley was just 1 year old, so all three kids called him dad. According to Joe, he and Holly had discussed him adopting Riley and Michael all the way up until a couple of months prior to the incident we are talking about today, which stands out because they were divorced in 2021 and she was married to another man.
Right, but he was their dad. You know, if you have been in a kid's life for basically all of it, blood doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, and that's what was this guy right here. He's pretty adamant that those were my kids.
They were. Yeah, I agree with that. Now, Holly married Jesse McFadden on May 26th, 2022, and moved to Henrietta, Oklahoma. It was part of the divorce agreement that if either person started a relationship with someone else between Holly and Joe, that a background check would have to be done. So Joe asked Holly about it, and she said Jesse's was clean. On Saturday, April 29th, 2023, Tiffany and her friends, 14-year-old Ivy Webster and 16-year-old Brittany Brewer, went to the mall and to the main event, then had a sleepover at Tiffany's house. This was typical of the girls, and they had stayed at each other's houses a lot. A little bit about the girls. Brittany was outgoing and wanted to be a teacher or a vet, and she was also picked to be in an upcoming pageant. Ivy loved softball and was Tiffany's best friend. They were connected at the hip and did everything together. Ivy's parents even joked with Tiffany about giving her a key to their house because she was there so much. Ivy was supposed to be home on Sunday by 5 p.m. She was on Snapchat with her mom until around midnight on Saturday. Sunday morning, she texted her parents saying that they were going to a ranch in McAllister, which they had been to before. Her mom said that the message didn't really sound like Ivy, but it wasn't so far off that it caused concern. She just chalked it up to them being maybe in a hurry or something like that. Later in the day, Jesse called Ivy's mom, saying they were still in McAllister, but they had poor cell reception. So Ivy's mom just told him to keep her updated. By the end of the day, being unable to make contact with any of them at this point, and noticing that Ivy's Life 360 app had been turned off, they contacted the police. Ivy's dad said they used to joke about Ivy sending them a proof of life picture when she was away from home, but she didn't do that either on this day.
Alarm bells, you know, are starting to go off at this point.
Right. Awareness is being raised.
Yeah.
Oklahoma Highway Patrol issued a missing and endangered alert for Ivy and Brittany on May 1st. Also that day, when Jesse didn't show up for court, a warrant was issued, and police went to Jesse and Holly's house that they were renting. They found the bodies of all seven people. All had died from a gunshot wound to the head with a 9mm handgun. Ivy, Brittany, and Riley's bodies were found with about 100 to 150 yards between them, and they were about a quarter of a mile from the house. Michael, Tiffany, Holly, and Jesse's bodies were together about 450 yards away from the other bodies. The gun used was purchased by Holly in January of 2022. It was found near Jesse's body, so it is believed that he killed the others and then hurt himself. the Okmulgee Police, and the OSBI, which is the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigations, take on the case and investigate. At the risk of repeating myself, we are very familiar with some Okmulgee County investigations and how they've been conducted, but we are coming to find that this is also widespread across Oklahoma. Kind of like working most places, you have the good people who really want to serve and protect, then the power-hungry I'm God types, which usually come with a side of corruption, the I do what I want people, the list goes on. But today, it's about the not my job people. The scene was released to the families by Thursday, May 4th, so this is 3 days after the bodies were discovered. They stated it was no longer an active investigation.
And there's a familiar sound. You know, we have heard that so many times, you know, in so many cases, when they leave the scene, like they actually did something, but come to find out there was a lot more that needed to be done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we have a recurring theme.
Yeah, I mean, and so far, you know, we're running into that in mostly Oklahoma.
Mostly Oklahoma, yeah. It's so sad. And it's frustrating.
Which really sucks to say.
It really does. But another thing I've learned by doing all these Oklahoma cases is that the ones that get national coverage like this one did, there's a lot of people that just shit talk Oklahoma because of our judicial system, because of the corruption, because of the issues. There's been people that go on TV.
Yeah.
And say that Oklahoma needs to be completely overhauled when it comes to this. And I agree. So if you have one shot at these crime scenes, why not be thorough? Because once it's done, it's gone. Like, you no longer have access to get evidence or anything like that. If it was me, I'd be taking everything just to be careful. But here, they just figured that since the person who committed the crime was right there, they didn't have to investigate anything, which is bullshit. So when Ivy's family went to the house, they brought a local news crew. You can watch the video online, and it got me riled. I was heated. You can see that there are no disturbances, like there was a struggle or anything, no blood spatter, no obvious signs that any of the deaths took place inside the house. But there are multiple desktop computers, laptops, a gaming console, typical house stuff. And then you notice the disturbing stuff. They see a mattress with a cow print pillow on it. They state that this is Tiffany's bedding. And the mattress is pulled out from the wall. Attached to the bottom of the wall is a board with eyelets and chains connected to them. The kitchen island had chains and a lock bolted to the center of it. There were sex toys, lubrication bottles, witchcraft books, and drugs like marijuana gummies, powder residue, and needles. Police have said that they only found two phones in the house, which is odd because it's 2023. There's two adults and five teenagers. Why are there only two phones in this house? Justin, Ivy's dad, opened a cabinet in what looks to be the laundry room, and you can clearly see a stack of cell phones on the top shelf. They're right up at the front of the shelf so they can be seen very clearly. He sees that one of these phones is Ivy's. Someone tried to hand him a plastic shopping bag to use to pick up the phones without disturbing any evidence on them like fingerprints, but you can hear Justin telling him that the bag has a receipt in it for the lock, so that itself is evidence. So there's now evidence on top of evidence.
Yeah, they were pissed. I mean, I was pissed when I was watching it. And, you know, they had to call Okmulgee County back out there.
Yep.
And it was just, you know, this is just stuff that they should have done the first time.
Like I said, they felt like their job was done.
It's ridiculous.
And Justin tells the cops, I'm going to say this quote, "My daughter was locked up here, right here. That's what I just don't get. I know you guys are hurting too. And I know you have a hell of a job to do. You saw my daughter dead, shot in the head. And I know what you're seeing. And I know what you went through. But a lot of this stuff needs to be taken. You guys have to come back out here and do a whole nother sweep because you missed so much. There's medicine, there's drugs, brand new locks that he put in and brand new fucking key and lock on the counter. Why are we not getting receipts and video of him purchasing this shit?" And he's right. The investigator was there taking pictures of the cell phones in the cabinet, just saying, I don't know what else to do. I don't know what you want me to do. What do you think this will accomplish? Finding out how far this thing goes? Are there other victims of Jesse's? Was anything put on the dark web? Like, there's a lot of things that need to be known. Omogi County officers said that they were just to search the outside of the property where the bodies were found, and OSBI was supposed to search the inside of the house. OSBI said that they were just there to assist if needed, but that Omogi County was supposed to search inside and out. Either way, they were looking at this as a solved case. So, to them, as I said, nothing else to investigate. But Omogi County did collect more evidence, including the receipt for the locks that were purchased just a day or two before the murders, the five more phones that were in the cabinet, and paraphernalia. And I would like to say that that was it, but the cops had to be called out to collect evidence not just one time, but three times total. Justin even found a bloody wet wipe that they wouldn't take.
I mean, it looks like the cops really were just doing the bare minimum, you know, to get the families off their backs instead of actually looking at this like something, you know, that needed to be investigated.
Yeah. Yeah. And why would you, even if it, you thought your investigation part was over, why would you release a house back to the family with needles and drugs and all this stuff just laying around?
Well, first of all, you don't.
Oh, well, there's something.
First of all, you don't.
I thought drugs were illegal.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, they, you know, it's like they was doing the blame game.
Yes.
On everything, and it's just, it's ridiculous. You know, they should have been more considerate to the families and you know, and to the victims.
100%.
They just, again, I'm saying it again, they, you know, they dropped the ball.
You know, we
say that a lot. I mean, especially on this case. I mean, this right here is horrible.
Yes, very horrible. And an aunt of one of the victims moved a dresser and saw Velcro restraints taped to the back of it. When she asked the cop there if he wanted to take it for evidence, he said, no. He told her to throw them away or take them home because all the stuff in the house was going to be tossed anyway. And the family said that there was a check made out to a storage rental company for what looked like monthly rent, just laying out in clear view that the cops didn't care about. If he was hiding stuff from his family regarding previous victims or current victims, it would be a good place to look. But there have been no reports that this was ever looked into. Holly's ex-husband, Joe, who, remember, he treated all of Holly's kids like his own, he didn't even get a call from officials to tell him that his biological daughter was one of the victims, much less the others. He saw it on a Facebook post. He was devastated, understandably, but that shows just how blasé they seemed about this. Now, what comes out about Jesse is disturbing. In 2003, Jesse was arrested for attacking an underage girl. He held her at knife point, tied her to a bed, and sexually assaulted her. It was so bad, she was told that she could never have kids. He was charged with first-degree rape by force and fear and got sentenced to 20 years in prison. In prison, he was a level 4 on the good behavior scale, which means he was doing good. But in 2016, he was caught with a cell phone. The phone showed that Jesse had been grooming an underage girl. Reports say that she was about 15. I'll just give you an idea there. There were videos, photos, and texts that showed Jesse was controlling and manipulative. That's a word. Manipulative. He, of course, said he wasn't talking to the young girl. He was talking to her 21-year-old friend. Well, he was bumped down to a level 1 again in the good behavior scale and had new charges in Muskogee County for soliciting sexual conduct / communication with a minor by use of technology and procuring, producing, distributing juvenile pornography. But before long, his excellent inmate status had him back to a level 4, and after serving just 85% of his sentence, he was released early in October of 2020, even though he was still writing letters to the girl he was sexting while in prison.
And see, this is the part where I got heated.
Yeah.
He wrote a letter 11 months after he was arrested in 2003 saying that, you know, he was going to be a better person.
Yeah.
And that he no longer that longer that he stayed in jail, that the harder it would be for him to make a decent living.
Yeah.
The judge shut that shit down.
Oh, yay for that.
But then 13 years later, he acquires a cell phone in prison.
Yep.
Way to go.
Way to go, prison system.
Yeah. And he acquires this phone and then does the same shit.
Same shit.
And then, so they knock him down for his good behavior. Mm-hmm. Whatever. He should have had all of his good behavior taken away,
mm-hmm.
and never been able to earn any more good behavior.
Yeah. That would be in an ideal world, but not here.
And I mean, and that's why the system is so fucked right now.
Yes.
Is because he should have never got out.
No. No lessons were learned. If you get in trouble 13 years after you've already been in jail for doing something and you're doing the same shit, you've learned nothing.
Nothing at all.
You've been rehabilitated none. It's not happening.
No.
Ugh,
that's proof right there that you're right back in the same old, same old.
Same shit.
Yes.
Now, see, I personally believe that this type of offender cannot be rehabilitated. It's in their brain, not a behavior that can be corrected. And I've heard stories from sex offenders saying that they can't stop even if they wanted to. And some say they even hate themselves, but they can't control it. He was arrested in Muskogee County in November of 2022 for those new charges, but he was able to bond out to await trial. He didn't have a parole officer or anything that would come to his house and check in randomly. He did self-check-ins, where he would go to the sheriff's office every 90 days and fill out a piece of paper and then go back to his freedom. We've seen some of these papers he filled out, and he clearly lists that he is in the home with 3 stepchildren, all teenagers, 2 females, which is his age group. That's what he likes.
Yeah.
Nobody said anything.
Nope.
Sorry, I'm getting riled.
Well, and the whole thing is he should have never been released.
No.
He should have never got out on good behavior.
No.
So if he wasn't let out on good behavior and he had to serve his full term, this right here would have never happened.
He would have still been in jail when this happened.
He would have still been in jail, and he would have already went to trial for his new charges, which then would have added more time for all his other shit.
I'd hope so.
And that means he would never gotten out.
I would hope
so. The system has really fucked up here.
All the way around. All the way around. Because if you're not a registered sex offender, how do your people around you know?
Yes.
They always tell you, check the registry. Well, what if they're not on the registry?
Yeah. Check the state's registry. That's what everybody does. As soon as you hear that there's a sex offender in your neighborhood, they automatically go to the state's registry. And when it doesn't show up, people are like, okay, well, whatever. They don't think, check the national registry.
Yeah.
Which is what he was on.
Exactly. And we've heard instances where, you know, even if they are supposed to be registered, we actually know personally that sex offenders don't always register.
Don't always register because, oh, well, you know, it's been 30 days. It don't time out.
30 years.
30 years. I mean, 30 years. I'm like, that shit don't time out.
No, if you're told you need to register as a sex offender, you remain registered as a sex offender.
Yeah, you're a sex offender for fucking life.
But the person that we're talking about did not register, and they just stopped, and no one is following up.
Nope.
Flaws. Flaws.
That's what I'm saying. That was another slip through the crack.
I'm not perfect, but when it comes to the safety and well-being of children in my area, I think I'd be a little more diligent.
Yeah.
If I was in this position. Anyways, Jesse had a cellmate for 16 months, and he said in an interview that when he first met Jesse, he seemed like a clean-cut guy, but after about 6 months, he started sleeping with one eye open because of how weird Jesse was. Jesse had told him that he was in for statutory rape, and it was just a misunderstanding. But the cellmate knew that you don't get 20 years for a misunderstanding. He said that all conversations with Jesse turned sexual, and he caught Jesse stalking the nursing staff and medical. He even looked Jesse up after he was released and came across Jesse and Holly's marriage certificate. You see, he knew Holly. They had been pen pals while he was in prison and kept up with each other. So he texted Holly, saying that he saw that her name changed, and she confirmed that she married Jesse. He then asked how the kids were doing, and her reply was positive, saying that they were getting huge, talking about them growing. Knowing what Jesse was in prison for, the cellie looked up on the sex offender registry and saw that he wasn't there. So at this time, he decided he would go straight to the authorities. He said he was afraid to tell Holly straight on in case Jesse found out and hurt her. So he went to the cops and told them what was going on. But again, nothing. 2 months before the murders, Holly's dad was looking up a coworker in the court records to see what his charges were in an unrelated case and came across Jesse's 2003 case. They told Holly. Holly asked Jesse about it, and Jesse actually hired a woman to pretend to be his victim and tell Holly that it was consensual and just a misunderstanding. And sadly, Holly believed her. On Sunday, April 30th, Jesse had called his mom saying he was going to kill himself so he didn't have to go back to prison. He also made the dick move of texting his victim that these charges were pending on and said, "I did exactly what I promised I would do when I got out. I got a marketing job making great money and was being advanced. Been there 2 years now and had a great life, like I promised I would do with you. This is all on you for continuing this." And then in another message said, "Now it's all gone. I told you I wouldn't go back." He is a scared little man. He's not accepting blame for any wrongdoing. He was trying to make his victim feel bad when she was not in the wrong. The state picked up these charges, even though she was going to testify against him. Big props for the courage to do that. But it's not like she could have walked in there and said she wanted the cops to drop the charges and he would be a free man. That's not how this works.
Yeah, you know, this happens a lot in domestic violent cases, and you know, where the victim backs out and decides that they're, you know, they're staying with their abuser, and you know, they want to drop all the charges. You know, once you call and make the accusation,
they get involved.
They're done. I mean, that means, all right, you don't want to do it. Well, that's fine. The state will take it over.
The state can take any they want,
and it's theirs now.
Yeah, even if she was like, "Okay, I'm good. I don't want." It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. You already made a case.
So him blaming her was just a dick move.
Yep, and they already had proof. That's
exactly.
You know, that's what I'm saying. They already had all the damn proof.
They didn't even really need her testimony. That was just another level to show.
They had everything.
Yes. Yes. So he can't blame her is the point I'm getting at. He cannot. And so the motive here for these murders and his suicide seems to be one last horrible thing for him to do before he ended his own life to avoid prison again. Because in case you missed the timeline, these bodies were found the day his trial was to start for these charges. So he did this the day before he was supposed to go back to jail or go to court. Now, the autopsy results came in last summer and showed that the family members had arm and leg abrasions, while the two friends that were staying the night had blunt force trauma to their genitals. This report was also released to the media before the families were notified. So that's another strike against the way this case is handled. And there are questions as to exactly how much Holly knew about. Now, I'm not trying to victim blame in any way, shape, or form, but there are questions. In her divorce papers from December of 2021, it states that there were no minor children from her and Joe's marriage. There's no mention of Tiffany. Some speculate that this may have been an attempt on Holly's part to keep from raising awareness that at this time she was living with a sex offender. But he was listing all three of her kids on his check-ins every 3 months with the police. So that doesn't seem to have mattered. Another speculation is that since Joe didn't mention Tiffany either or bring it up in court, that there was an attempt to avoid child support. But in Oklahoma, if no one's getting assistance from DHS, they can agree to waive child support. That wouldn't have been something to lie about. You know, you don't just exclude your daughter because you don't want to pay when you can just both agree you don't have to pay. Another speculation is that maybe Tiffany wasn't biologically Joe's either, but I will not entertain that one.
No, I mean, you know, those kids were all his.
They were all three his kids. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah.
So that leaves the question of, with all the stuff around the house, could all of that been done in 2 days? Or was this the normal state of the house? Surely if it was how the house was all the time, one of those friends would have told their parents, We know that Brittany and Ivy had a good relationship with their parents, so they surely would have told them if these restraints and locks were randomly around the house every time they came to visit. The concern with all the electronics in the house is that what he did that weekend or even prior, like, was filmed, or that he took pictures and they were sent to someone or uploaded to the dark web. And the families were pushing for all this to be investigated. This could have uncovered a ring of people, but the authorities had to be forced to take the computers. So who knows if they even looked at them or just stuck them in some evidence room and are letting them collect dust.
And, you know, and this could have been avoided. You know, he should have never been released from prison.
Nope.
With pending charges. He should have had to register as a sex offender. Yes. In the state of Oklahoma. Yep. I mean, hell, he had three years after he was charged with sexting a prison.
To go to court, yeah.
Yeah, just to go to court. Then he had three more years after he was released from prison to go to court.
So that's 6 years, 3 years in, 3 years out. Either way, he had 6 years to go to court for those charges and never went to court. So either way, he had 6 years from the time he committed the second offenses and was charged with them till he committed these murders that he did not even see his day in court. And they said that there were things that kept pushing back his trial, like the prosecutor broke his foot, and then COVID happened, and then his lawyer passed away from COVID. So it was one thing after another.
Yeah, you know, they could have had video court at any time during that 6 years.
Yeah.
And they could have kept him in prison so they knew where the sex offender was.
Right. If he's pending a case, pending charges, don't let him out so that you have to go find him again.
Yeah.
Just don't make any sense. So Ivy's dad, Justin, has been very vocal about how he feels in regard to how sex offenders of this degree are not held to a more strict standard. He wants signs in their yards. He wants their pictures in schools, stores, public libraries, everywhere, so that kids recognize danger when they see it. He wants check-in systems at the schools like Raptor or somewhere around here, our lobby guard, but they have to be registered in order to pop up on those machines.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, just talk about lobby guard. I mean, it's basically, I mean, I've had to deal with lobby guard because I used to work in schools.
Right.
And when you would show up to a school, you get your ID out, you scan it, and if a sex offender or any kind of offense, basically, it would.
If it was violent, like a violent offense?
If it was a violent offense, if it popped up on their registry or whatever. Basically, what happened was it would send a signal to the police department.
Perfect.
Within 30 seconds to, say, 2 minutes.
Okay.
Which is pretty fast response.
That's pretty quick.
And all the people in the office had to do was stall.
Which is probably easy with all the paperwork you got to fill out at school all the time.
So, yeah, you know, and all they had to do is just be like, oh, they'll be here in just a minute. And just, why don't you just have a seat?
Just have a seat, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I've been there one time when they showed up.
You saw it in action?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there scanning and everything. And the lady at the counter was like, hey, can you wait here for just a minute? And everything. I was like, yeah.
Did you freak out a little bit thinking that maybe you popped for something that was not yours?
No, because she kind of looked at the person and everything.
Oh,
I was like, yeah.
Okay.
And next thing you know, cops came in, grabbed, you know, said, hey, you need to come with us. And
hauled him out.
Walked that person right
See,
out.
And, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great idea. I think every school should be equipped with this.
That's what Justin's trying to do.
I don't blame him.
Let's sign this. If he has a petition, we'll sign it.
Yeah.
If he needs something, we'll do it.
I'm a firm believer in it because when I seen it, I was like, hell yeah, that's the way to go. That right there is just one step closer to keeping your kids safe.
Yes, because Jesse was going to school events. He was going to sporting events and stuff like that for the kids, picking them up, doing. He was there on school grounds with these children.
Knowing damn well he's a sex offender. He's not even supposed to be anywhere near.
Nowhere near them.
Kids or anybody.
Yep. But he was doing what he wanted. Nobody was there to stop him.
Yeah.
Lobby guard or Raptor would have.
Yeah.
Governor's did, FYI. So Justin and the rest of the families did get at least one thing done on their list really quick, and that's the Knight's Law. I just read that as of March 12th, 2024, Knight's Law did pass. So instead of certain offenders having to serve 85% of their sentence, now they have to serve 100% of their sentence for first-degree rape, child sex abuse, child pornography or aggravated child pornography, child prostitution, and human trafficking. And this is in Oklahoma. There is more to go, as they also want a minimum sentence for these crimes to be life without parole. He said that he could have just named the law after the kids, the victims in our story, but it's not just about one incident. It's about all the kids in their area. So they actually named the law after the school mascot, the Knights, which is very fitting.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, for Justin Webster and
the other parents.
Well, and like his wife and then the other parents and everything. I mean, for them to have this thing pushed through so quick.
That was really fast. I don't know if y'all have ever paid attention to how long it takes bills to become laws and things like that, but it takes a long time. But
yeah, no, I mean, this was awesome. I mean, whenever I heard this, and for him to have to, you know, basically be going through this and then trying to get this stuff passed and do this, I mean, gosh, man, it just shows the heart that he has for it. I mean, just in everything. I mean, just the passion.
Well, yeah, it's his kid.
It was his kid. I know. I mean, I understand it. And I mean, it's just, man, it's just a lot.
You always say you'll do everything for your kids. You would do anything for your kids. Yeah. And unfortunately, when it comes to things like this, it seems like the parents are the ones having to do everything for these kids.
Yeah. I love the fact that, you know, he was talking about, you know, child pedophiles or whatever, you know, they need to have signs out in their yards. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they need to post up where they're at and everything else because, you know, for stuff like this, I mean, you know, he said the country's coming for you.
Yeah, I think your favorite part of his interviews was when he says they're worried about their rights. They shouldn't have any damn rights.
They should not have any rights at all. You lost your rights.
And we were talking about that, too. Like, if you're convicted of a felony, they remove your right to own a firearm, yep. which is your Second Amendment right in the Constitution. Yep. If they can take that away from somebody, why can they not take this stuff away from child sex predators?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, it's like, you know, He went to prison. He 11 months in, he writes the judge. Judge shoots him down.
Yeah.
13 years later, he's
doing the same shit.
He's doing the same thing. He gets a phone in prison, mm-hmm. which
they're not supposed to do that.
They're not supposed to. How? And you're in a medium security prison, mm-hmm. which means how did it get there?
You know how it got there.
Exactly. So that means that system's fucked. And then he goes on to do, you know, gets three more charges,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Two
more charges, whatever. It doesn't matter, even if it was just one.
Right.
That was one too damn many.
Yep.
And then he gets knocked down on his freaking...
good behavior chart.
His good behavior chart, which, in my opinion, he should have been knocked down and never even given the option to be on the good behavior
yes.
program again.
Child sex offenders should not
at get that point. At that point, perk. He should have been able to. He should have had to serve the rest of his time in full while awaiting trial.
Agreed.
Whenever he was released on good behavior, when he reached his 85%, and then he was arrested and taken to Muskogee County. Those jackasses should have never let him go.
Who gives him bond?
And who gives it a bond that is low enough for you to bail out?
Exactly. Set that shit high.
Especially whenever you did this while you was in prison.
I'm gonna throw some personal stuff out there, but we know of a person that is in jail right now that they call the $1 million kid. Because when he was 18 years old, he was stealing stuff from Walmart and then taking it back and getting gift cards for it. Because if you don't have a receipt, they just put it on the card. And he got caught. And his bond for that is $1 million.
Yeah.
And he's still sitting there because he can't bond out.
And that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, we don't know him personally.
We just know of him.
We heard of him.
Yes.
And everything. And it's like, okay. So basically, you're in there for theft and burglary, basically. I mean, that's basically what it is. But, you know, this guy right here, he actually commits the crime while he's in prison.
For committing the crime.
For committing the same crime that he's in prison for.
Yep.
And they're just like, oh, yeah, we'll set a trial date. And then they're like, oh, COVID. I don't give a fuck. That right there, he should have never been out.
Crime did not stop when COVID happened.
Because I don't know how many people right now are in jail awaiting trial.
A bunch.
A lot. But he gets to go out.
And then we know people who are going through cases right now that just keep getting pushed back. Every time you go to court, it's continuance.
Exactly. I mean, and that's the whole thing. He should have never been released.
No.
Period.
No.
I mean, honestly, if I was the family members or the parents or anything like that, I'd get a lawyer.
I'm sure they have one.
No, I would. I'd go get a lawyer and I would start suing the shit out of people. That's my opinion.
Everybody.
I would sue the freaking prison.
The state?
I would sue the state. I would sue the freaking county. I would sue everybody that had their hands in on releasing and letting this guy fucking continue his fucking life.
Because that's not one of those lawsuits that's for gain as far as money. That's one of those lawsuits that's for gain to change policies.
And, you know, and the Muskogee DA came on the news and was like, you know, I take full responsibility. No, you don't.
Oh, it was the new one. Yeah, he came in halfway through.
I was like, no, you don't. You're just saying that just to get the fucking heat off of you and everything else.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, like, this never should have been an option.
If you can sit there at a table and say, I take full responsibility and go on about your day, you're not taking full responsibility for the death of six people.
And when they say, I'm taking full responsibility, that's them fucking admitting that they fucked up.
Ooh, that's true. You got it on tape now.
Yes. I'm just saying. I'm all for this Knight's Law.
Yay.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, 110,000%.
Yes.
Because this right here should never happen to a family. And this was such a sad story.
And hopefully this will help prevent something like this in the future.
Absolutely. I mean.
Can't imagine.
Man.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah, screw that guy. Well, this was the end of this one.
We got to go cool off.
This one was a rough one because I really got heated on the whole system on this one here. Because this should have never even happened.
Nope.
But I hope you guys join us next time. Have a great night.
Bye.